Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM's show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we're going to be taking a look at the 1958 Robert Wise film, Run Silent, Run Deep.
Yeah.
But first, let's talk about just a little bit of news, shall we?
Yes, let's.
Okay. First off, One Night in Miami, the play by Kemp Powers, which we discussed a few months back.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's playing in London, and it is nominated for an Olivier Award.
Which is awesome. The category was what that it was nominated in?
Best New Play.
That is great. What's its competition?
Well, Elegy, which I don't know what that is.
No, I don't either.
The Flick, which I think is, if I'm not mistaken, that's a play about like a movie theater, like one of the last movie theaters to run 35 millimeter.
Oh, and wow. That sounds like something that you and I would both love to go see.
Yeah, and it's about like all the employees. And it was playing in Chicago for a really long time. And they have like, they actually like ran 35 millimeter and stuff. And I was like, oh, I need to go see that. You know, when's it playing? And then it was gone. You know, I was like one of those people who was like, I'll get around to it. And then it plays for like 6 months. And then, you know, on week, you know, 27, so I'm like, what the hell, man? Why did they have to leave so soon? You know,
was Chicago like where they were doing their like warm up run before they opened on Broadway?
I think it had played elsewhere before, I can't remember if it originated in Chicago or what. But yeah, but it played here for a long time, and it's supposed to be. It had played before because it won a Pulitzer or something like that.
Oh,
so
wow,
yeah,
that's huge.
Yeah.
That's a big one. Wow.
And then the other movie which it's up against is a little known thing, which is called Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
Harry what?
I'm not sure. It's, you know, British. I don't know anything about British, you know, theater.
Yeah, no, that sounds weird.
It's weird.
Harry, whatever. Okay.
So I'm sure, out of those four, I'm sure that One Night in Miami is the front runner.
It should be.
It should be. I mean, you know.
I haven't seen any of the other ones, but based on my reaction to just reading One Night in Miami, and I'm not just saying this just because we covered it. I really am not saying it just, like, of the four that you just mentioned, I haven't even heard of Elegy, but, like, it's One Night in Miami and then The Flick, like, has, you know, causes that little blip in my brain. You know, maybe it's some sort of, you know, snobbery in my character, but like I hear Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, I'm like, ah, okay, it's just, you know, it's a big production, and which is fine, but it's like it's almost like that whole thing of like, the big showy things sometimes don't really, you know, the happiest times I've been at a professional theater have been the smaller, more intimate shows.
Yeah,
is I guess what I'm saying.
Yeah, I've never read a Harry Potter book. But I have seen all the Harry Potter movies, and I can tell you that One Night in Miami is better than all of those, without a doubt. And I have little doubt that it's better than the play. So, you know, whatever. Maybe that's my personal bias. But if you haven't read or seen, if you're in London and you can see One Night in Miami, go do that. You know,
yeah.
We haven't seen it, but we have read it. You can get the script off of Amazon for the Kindle and all that good stuff. So definitely check it out. And you can also check out our episode in which we discuss it. It's episode 23 of Stage 9, in which we discuss One Night in Miami. So go over there and check that out, and check out the play, and let us know what you think. Hey, and yes, and for those people who may not know why we're talking about this, it's because the writer of the play, Kemp Powers, is one of the writers of Star Trek Discovery. So
yes.
There you go. There you go. Pretty awesome. All right. So now, one other thing. This could very well be nothing, but the other day on Twitter, Jonathan Frakes posted a picture, an amazing picture, of himself in a Hawaiian shirt with a Steadicam on the set of Star Trek Insurrection. It's a picture which I loved so much that I had it hanging on the wall above my desk at work for probably over 10 years.
It's a fun picture.
Yeah. I know. And I know that sounds like a weird thing to have hanging on your desk or hanging on the wall above your desk, but, you know, whatever. Anyway, he tweeted this picture, and it was part of, like, the, I guess it's Flashback Friday, right? Hashtag FBF.
Yeah. Flashback Friday, which is the inevitable fall. It's like Throwback Thursday is NBC must-see television, and Flashback Friday is like that ABC slot that had Urkel on it.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, TGIF.
You liked Urkel?
I was in junior high. I didn't like Urkel so much as I liked Step by Step. That was my show. And that's also where...
The thing is, I actually liked Family Matters because Reginald Vail Johnson, is that his last name?
Yeah.
He plays a cop. I know he always plays a cop, but like he was really funny.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and then they did it was also the block where they had Full House too.
Yep.
Yeah,
it sure is. And without Full House, you don't get Fuller House, Mike.
This is true. Yeah. Anyway, he posted that picture with the hashtag FBF, but then he wrote shooting ...
So was he asking, does anybody know what he was shooting? Or is he saying, is this a taste of Discovery work to come?
Who knows, right?
Only he knows.
Yeah.
And his agent. And the people at Star Trek Discovery who might have signed him up for something.
Yeah, so probably a lot of people know, but, you know, we're two people who don't. Yeah, we're two people who don't. Yeah. But you know, we live in hope, so.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
There you go. Okay, well, should we move on to our feature presentation for
Yes,
today?
Let us move on to our feature presentation.
Run Silent, Run Deep. Okay, this is a movie that came out in 1958. It was directed by Robert Wise, who directed Star Trek The Motion Picture, and it stars Clark Gable and Burke Lancaster and Don Rickles, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to give a synopsis of Run Silent, Run Deep?
A naval commander whose submarine got sunk has been pushing desk duty for the following year in Hawaii, and he gets an opportunity to take command of a ship away from an accomplished man who just was expecting to take the captaincy of the ship, and he takes that ship out to go seek a difficult enemy, a great challenge, that go back to the Bungo Straits of Japan to try to defeat his past and prove that it wasn't his fault that he lost his boat, that he can redeem himself, as it were.
Yes, and I guess this movie is noteworthy as being maybe the first, certainly one of the first and most iconic submarine movies. Mm-hmm. And one which kind of set the tone for future submarine movies. And by that, yes, I mean submarine movies that would be made in the future and submarine movies that would take place in the future.
Yes. So, yes. There are definitely some moments where you look at it and you say, huh, that looks a little familiar.
Yes, yes, for sure. So... Well, yeah. What did you think about Run Silent, Run Deep? I take it you've seen it before, right?
I did see it before. I saw it. I forget why. Like, for some reason, I think it was there was a time period where I was unemployed, so I went up to my friend's house and I babysat his apartment, and he had it in his collection. I watched like 10 movies in a weekend or something like that. And this was one of them, and I didn't know at the time that Robert Wise directed it. So I watched it. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it this time, too. But what has always struck me about it was the setup for it was very much like a proto-Kirk Decker showdown laid out. And at the when I got to directed by Robert, you know, when I pieced it together, directed by Robert Wise, and then I see this, you know, I thought that it's a clear stamp of how a director can come on board and say, no, I have a good way to set this up. Mm-hmm. And because, I mean, it is almost blow for blow how Kirk and Decker are, you know, you don't know this ship the way I do. The crew is dedicated to me. You're just upset because you're behind a desk and you want to be back out on the high seas. And it's like, wow, this really, really comes into play in the motion picture. So, and of course they wind up working together to overcome the obstacles and whatnot. Spoilers.
Yeah, that was one of the things which really stood out to me too, because this was my first time seeing it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had always heard like, oh, you know, it's a really big influence on, you know, Wrath of Khan and on, you know, Balance of Terror and everything. So I was like, okay, yeah, I can definitely, having not seen Run Silent, Run Deep, I can totally understand what they're talking about, because those things are basically, you know, submarine movies in space. So it makes sense that they would be borrowing from this, you know, not to mention, you know, Nicholas Meyer's obvious love for the works of Robert Wise. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. Meyer even interviews Wise on the commentary for The Day the Earth Stood Still, because he thinks it's like the best science fiction movie ever made or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of love going on there for Robert Wise, you know, from Nicholas Meyer. But one thing which really did take me by surprise was the Kirk Decker stuff, you know, with Gable and Lancaster, because I didn't know anything about any of that. And as soon as they started to set this up, I'm like, whoa, I knew that he influenced, you know, other, you know, Star Trek works, but I didn't think he influenced himself, because, I mean, for all the things that Star Trek the Motion Picture is, one thing it's not is a submarine movie, you know what I mean?
Yes, in a lot of ways it isn't. It's almost as if I don't know. I mean, the thing is, I've, you know, obviously never worked on a movie, but, you know, the directors do influence the shaping of a script. You know, mm-hmm. they suggest this or they recommend that. I think that there's just a very clear argument that Wise came on board and they were probably struggling with, you know, what's our impetus. But what really struck me about it watching it this time, and this is not taking anything away from Shatner and, I forget his name, who played Decker.
That's okay. I think it's perfectly okay to forget that guy's name these days.
The thing that struck me was, you know, movies from the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, they're not really known for, you know, being naturalistic in their acting or relatable. You know, people, you know, tend to say, oh, well, that's acting from a different era. But Gable and Lancaster, if I'd seen fire like this between Kirk and Decker, Star Trek the Motion Picture is a better movie. Like, it's so, they're so locked off and standoffish. I don't know, like, did somebody restrict Wise and say, no, don't have him be too emotional? You know, like, Kirk and Decker seems like an antiseptic echo of what goes on between Gable and Lancaster in this. Like, Gable and Lancaster, I was invested in, I believed in this animosity toward each other, and then they're later, you know, ameliorating everything and learning to work together. Whereas with Star Trek the Motion Picture, it very much comes off as, this is what we're supposed to be doing right now.
I mean, I see what you're saying, and I mean, I think maybe, like, you describe it as an antiseptic echo of, you know, Gable and Lancaster or whatever. I think in a lot of ways, the motion picture is kind of an antiseptic echo of Star Trek. I don't know.
I'd say that's a fair call. So somebody obviously, Wise could have gotten this in the movie. Mm-hmm. Somebody must have given him the direction to say, no, less emotion or something like that.
You know, I don't know. I mean, maybe it was the performances, you know, maybe it was just the style that he was going for, because you kind of see that weird standoffishness, you know, throughout the movie, right? You know?
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if maybe it was almost a stylistic choice, if that makes any sense. Because I mean, motion picture is like a very intellectual movie. And it's really sort of devoid of emotion in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? And yeah, I'm not saying that as a bad thing at all. I'm just saying it's a much more sort of like intellectual exercise than it is like an emotional journey. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, the part of the whole thing that Roddenberry was going for was that, you know, people's emotions would have been much more under control in the future, mm-hmm. and people wouldn't have been as fiery. And you can definitely see that, you know, in the beginning of Next Generation as well, which is a very, you know, bloodless update of the original Trek, you know, until the third season. But I mean, this is the thing. This is the thing. Is Wise has this under his belt. He has Day the Earth Stood Still under his belt. He has Sound of Music under his belt, yet he can't push back enough to say, like, wouldn't something in him as a director have said, no, I've done this before. I can get this to work emotionally without it, you know, in a military setting. Maybe it's because he was trying to relate it militarily and Roddenberry didn't like that. Who knows? But I just, you know, I'll just always watch Run Silent, Run Deep and say, I just wish this could have been there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting thought. But I guess I don't really see it as a problem in motion picture so much as just a different thing, you know?
Okay.
I mean, I definitely see what you're saying. I just I don't know. I guess I see it as more of a stylistic choice than anything else.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. I'm just saying that, like, I would have connected better with the characters. I would have cared more if I had some sort of emotional hook to grab onto.
Yeah, and that might be a problem with, you know, motion picture on the whole, you know? Yeah. I mean, that might be why Wrath of Khan works so much better, you know, because we do care about the characters a lot more. And it's not so much about, you know, I mean, the human adventure is no longer just beginning, I guess. I don't know.
But isn't it funny, though, that Meyer is such a fan of Wise and he comes on to take Star Trek II on and has an obvious callback to Wise's own submarine movie?
Yeah.
You know, like, there's a certain poetry to that, I guess, mm-hmm. to have that called out. It doesn't tie motion picture and Wrath of Khan together any better, but I still think it's just sweet that, you know, there was respect for Wise, on the part of the director who followed him, if not the fans who watched the first movie.
Yeah, it is really interesting that, because I'm sure that, you know, Run Silent, Run Deep was a greater influence on Wrath of Khan than motion picture was, you know?
Yes,
you wouldn't think that that would be the case, but it is, you know? And I think that that's pretty cool, you know? I mean, it's just one of those weird things, but I think it's pretty cool how that ended up.
Well, and it's even, you know, with the taking command thing, like, it's almost like a new, you know, a revisiting of, you know, Kirk's behind a desk again. Kirk wants command, but now instead of having somebody push back against him, it's his friend. So, like, I suppose if you wanted to, you could feel a nice echo there to say the first time Kirk takes command, this variable is in place. And then the second time he tries to take command, the variable is different. And so it goes better. Well, I mean, at first it goes better, you know, in terms of his friend saying, like, yeah, you can take the ship and everything. But, you know, I'm sure that there's some blog to be written about the echo of the motion picture in Star Trek II as well.
Yeah, it is kind of weird that they decided to do that same sort of like character arc twice in a row, which is kind of the same thing that happened in freaking, you know, Star Trek 09 and Into Darkness. They decided to do like the same character arc for Kirk like two movies in a row. What's up with that? Why do they keep on doing that in first and second movies?
You know what? I would offer with Star Trek II, Star Trek II still exists at a time where there isn't the home viewer market that there is now. So you can get away with something like that. You can say, okay, well, we had motion picture and we liked the idea of Kirk having to come back, but it didn't work out so well. So let's revisit it. People haven't seen it, you know, for 3 years at this point. Whereas Into Darkness exists in an environment where we see 09 in the theater, we see 09 at home, we see 09 again at home, we watch it to prep for Into Darkness, and we walk in and the revisit of the theme doesn't work because by that point we're sick of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that's true, but I think at the same time, you know, Star Trek fans being who they are like the one sort of like outlier to that in 1982 or whatever, you know what I mean?
But the thing is, well, I mean, the home video market, though, was there, but it was nowhere near what it was going to be a couple of years after Star Trek II.
I guess that's true.
VHS didn't really, like, bust into the home market until, 79, 80 is when it became a common enough thing that you knew somebody on your block who owned one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we my dad was an early adopter, but... You know, having a movie, like there was a reason I watched Grease like a billion times as a kid, because you got one movie and that was going to last you for 6 months because, you know, you didn't have the rental market that you had back, you know, and all of that stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I guess the other thing that we should point out is it's not just the movies, which Run Silent, Run Deep influenced. It's also, you know, the original series with Balance mm-hmm. of Terror. And
oh, yeah.
That, you know, I can almost see... More so in a lot of ways. I mean, there's the whole thing with, you know, the you know, faking out the Romulans with the, you know, debris in the bodies and, mm-hmm. you know, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Or I think it's the other way around. I think it's the Romulans who put their, yeah, but regardless. Yeah. I mean, you got to think that was lifted right from Run Silent, Run Deep and put in this
yeah.
movie. And the one thing about, you know, this movie, watching it, you know, in sort of thinking about all the comparisons that people make, in some ways I was disappointed because I kind of saw it as, yeah, I mean, preconceptions, you know, not having seen Run Silent, Run Deep, I was under the impression that, you know, one of the things which was going to be seen here that we see in these other things like Wrath of Khan and Balance of Terror is... the sort of chess game between the two captains.
Right.
And this, I mean, while there is that in this, it's much more one-sided. You know, we're not seeing the Japanese perspective, you know, hardly at all in this movie.
No, yeah, the only time you get the Japanese perspective is one specific scene where you're on a bridge when they're doing the running silent to see who's going to blink first, as it were, you know, who has to start up their engines first.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I mean, I can't fault Run Silent, Run Deep for that, you know, obviously, because they were doing their own thing, and it's not like, you know,
yeah.
just because I wanted to see that in a movie because that's what I thought I was going to see, that makes, you know, this, you know, any less of a movie, but...
The ending is curious, and it will always be curious, but I invite people to discover that ending for themselves.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, on the whole, well, I mean, what were your thoughts of the movie on the whole?
I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
I do. I think that, you know, like you said, from the historical perspective, it's interesting to watch. From the film influence perspective, it's interesting to watch. And I think that it's very easy to, you know, go, you know, again, with the performances, like Clark Gable is, okay, he's Rhett Butler. And so you're kind of like, yeah, whatever, Clark Gable. Or he gives a hell of a performance in this film.
Mm-hmm.
He really does. He sells it. And, you know, and the supporting cast is really good, too, including Don Rickles.
Yes.
And, you know, so I think that I would definitely say I would encourage somebody to watch this. It's what, an hour and 38 minutes?
Yeah. And I'd say I think it's even less than that. Actually.
Yeah. Well, it's right around an hour and a half. It's worth your time.
Mm-hmm.
Watch it. And even if you don't enjoy it, you will see the influences that it had later on. What did you wind up thinking about it?
I thought it was pretty good. You know, maybe I was building it up too much in my mind, or maybe it had been built up too much in my mind, you know, from other people talking about it and everything and the comparisons that they were making. But I did think it was an enjoyable movie, and I would recommend people see it. I think it's interesting looking at it in terms of Wise's career, because he was really all over the place in terms of what he was doing as a director. You know, I mean... motion picture and this and Day the Earth Stood Still, but then also, you know, Sound of Music and West Side Story and things like I Want to Live. And, you know, I mean, all these weird, crazy movies. He did not limit himself in terms of anything when it came to subject matter as a director of movies. So that was really interesting. Well, one other thing that I just want to bring up, because, you know, we've talked a lot about the perfection of the titles of the mm-hmm. Fast and the Furious franchise.
Yeah.
And how you can apply that sort of formula to other movies and it would work perfectly well.
It does work.
Mm-hmm. Run Silent, Run Deep, I think may be the absolute best example of this. You know, yeah. If you look at it, you know, you got Run Silent, Run Deep. The sequel would be Too Silent, Too Deep, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Run Silent, Run Deep, Tokyo Drift. I mean, come on.
They go behind enemy lines. There you go.
Then you've got, you know, Run Silent and Deep, right?
Yeah.
Because that would be okay. And then you've got Run 5 and Deep 6. Come on.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Perfect. So I challenge Hollywood to make 5 sequels to this movie just so that they can name them appropriately.
It's past time. Yes. Definitely past time.
Anyway, it's been fun talking about Run Silent, Run Deep today, but that's not all we're talking about here on Trek FM this week. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Warp 5.
Well, they decided to come out with something called the 1701 line, which is always cute. Retailers always want to do 1701, or they make the price $17.01, and that's real cute, except when you have 100,000 people who want a figure and you're only releasing 1701 of that figure, you're disappointing a lot of completists.
Saturday Morning Trek.
And the backgrounds were actually reused later in other Filmation properties.
That would be cool to see that. I never watched the He-Man cartoon, but I'm sure if I watched it today, I'd be getting like, oh, that's the planet from yesteryear or whatever episode.
Melodic Treks.
So you had an individual dialogue track, an individual sound effects track, and an individual music track. If you take out the dialogue and effects, if you just mute them, you're left with the edited and potted music stem.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and discover what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, you can find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, Windows Phone, Google Play, wherever. You can also just download the MP3 files from our website and grab the RSS link there as well. We'd like to thank our associate producers, Chris Steftenagel and Jeff Sutter.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much for your support. If you want to be like Chris and Jeff, head on over to patreon.com/trekfm and show us some love. If you go there, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks we have for you if you were to become a donor to the network. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you can find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. If you want to contact us, you can find the network on Twitter at TrekFM or on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Facebook.com is also where you'll find the Babel Conference. Just type the Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook. And you know, like people have been discussing on there, our topic, you know, from last week with some suggestions for their picks for Discovery directors, including people like Roxanne Dawson and James L. Conway and the people behind Man in the High Castle, particularly season 2. And, you know, I think that that's interesting because now, have you seen Man in the High Castle?
I have not.
Okay, because the pilot for Man in the High Castle was directed by David Semel. So so if people are saying like, hey, you know, they would be some good people to get over on Discovery, then, you know, maybe we're in some good shape with this here show.
Awesome.
Yeah. John, where can people find you on the internet?
Kessel Junkie. You can find me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. You can find me co-hosting Aggressive Negotiations with Matt Rushing over on the Nerd Party Network. And speaking of the Nerd Party Network, I am also co-hosting Great Shot Kid, which is this show, but for Star Wars creators. And the person I co-host that with is Mike Schindler.
Yeah, we're doing that over there on the Nerd Party. And tomorrow we are going to have an episode in which we discuss the movie by John Kasdan, the co-writer of the Han Solo film, In the Land of Women. Mm-hmm. You can find me there, and you can also find me on my website, commentarytrackstars.com, doing Commentary Track Stars. And you can also find a new show that I do on the Talk Film Society, talkfilmsociety.com, called Soderbergh 2828, which is...
What's the name of that, Mike?
Soderbergh 2828.
And what on earth could that be about?
It's about Steven Soderbergh's career, where we have 28 episodes looking at all 28 of his movies, which he's made over the span of his 28-year career, leading up to the release of his new film, Logan Lucky. We just started it up, and it's got some pretty snazzy artwork by John Mills. So check that out. And yeah, I feel like, I mean, as anyone who listens to this show knows, I'm kind of obsessed with Steven Soderbergh.
A little bit, just a little bit.
In a lot of ways, I feel like my entire like 7 years or whatever it's been as a podcast, almost exactly 7 years as a podcaster, has all been leading up to this. So
it's gonna be. You know what? I look forward to listening to it as soon as you get around to a Steven Soderbergh movie I've seen. Maybe this is a great reason to go through and revisit his catalog.
For sure.
Or visit it for the first time.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, like, because you were asking me online, like, are there spoilers or whatever? I guess my answer to that is as much as there are on this show or whatever, you know, it's not like we're ruining the end of La La Land or anything. But, you know, we'll discuss some plot points and everything. And yeah. So, but check it out. Check it out. It's pretty cool. It's over on talkfilmsociety.com. So
awesome.
All right. Well, that pretty much wraps up our show for this week. Next week, we're going to be taking a break. Our scheduled bye is next week. But we will be back the week after that to discuss the new captain of Star Trek Discovery, Jason Isaacs.